Voices Radio Network.
The views and opinions of Muscle Minds is for informational and educational purposes only.
Better, stronger, faster.
Welcome back to Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson. I'm Scott McNally. This program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You could use our code, which is ADVICES, and that'll give you some savings. Plus, you can support what we are doing here. I'm about to place an order myself. Victoria is a big fan, Scott, of the pea protein isolate that they have. She has to be really careful. She can only use like vegan sources of protein for her digestion. Uh-huh. And the isolate, the pea protein isolate, it actually, I've tried it too. It has a decent flavor. So you've got that option. Plus,
gamma protein, as they call it.
Is that what they call it?
I think on True Nutrition, they used to call it gamma protein. It's sort of hard to find. G-E-M-M-A.
Okay.
So people can't find it. Gamma.
And it's and the nice thing too is since it's an isolate, like I've looked on Amazon, if you just get a pea protein, period, it's usually concentrate. And that's what I've seen a lot more of. And then you get like 15 grams of carbs. Along with 15 grams of protein, it's kind of like it cancels each other out. It's not really that good.
Yeah, a lot of the vegetarian proteins are like that. They're just, they're a concentrate or they're just, they're really not, they really haven't isolated the protein.
Yeah.
A lot of carbs. It's almost, I think the folks who are taking in most of the vegetarians, they're just wanting to get some protein that's high quality. And they're not worried about doing the sort of bodybuilding things we're doing where they,
right.
They count their macros specifically, so.
So it may work for them. Yeah,
like rice protein can be like that sometimes. Okay. Just loaded with carbs and other stuff.
But nonetheless, guys, you can shop with True Nutrition to support the program here. Use our code ADVICES. Today, Dr. Scott and I, well, first of all, I want to tell you, Scott's feeling a little tired. But we're gonna keep the show moving.
You know, you can keep up with the Scott's tired thing like every 5 minutes.
But nobody's heard it yet.
Help.
Nobody's heard it yet.
I'm always tired.
And we've talked about getting him some modafinil, some adrafinil, some FL modafinil. None of it's working for him. So,
Scott, did you mention that I'm kind of tired today? I'm really feeling
no, but I was so about tired. To. The first thing okay, I wanted good. To do though was tell everybody what we're going to talk about today.
Emphasize my Scott's fatigue level.
today we are going to discuss a couple topics. Fat loading was one of them. VJ and I on Bodybuilding Nerds Radio were talking a little bit about fat loading this past episode, and he got to thinking. He was like, "Hey, I would value to hear what Dr. Scott thinks about fat loading if he's used it with his clients and stuff like that." So I thought that it would be cool to talk about. I think, at least in my mind, when we talk about loading. I always think of sorbet, and I always think of these really high carb loads. I think of, you know, your crazy shakes that you were doing intra-workout. I think of those stories, not so much like the fat loading. So that'll be an interesting topic. And also routine. That's something that's so important to us as bodybuilders and people in fitness, and it's something that we all have to have. I don't really know where we're going to go with that topic yet, but I know that once we start, it's going to go down an interesting road in there. There could be a rabbit hole or two that we get caught up in. So I dug
one out last night. So we'll go down the one I already dug for us.
All right. But first, before we get started, I want to mention that Scott's feeling a little tired today. So
tired.
Wait, you're tired?
I think probably by the end of this, I want to feed into my head that I'm going to feel awful in an hour. So that
I don't like that.
Make that a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I don't like
tired.
That. Here's my plan is how does this sound like that? By the end of this episode, Scott is going to feel so invigorated and happy with the show that we have done. He's going to rest in a comfortable slumber for the following 2 hours.
No, you're
going to
see an Instagram live story of me like running through a field of tulips, like, you know, full
after this.
Full, full of energy, with the dogs bounding after me. Yeah. It's going to be beautiful. Yeah.
It'll be good.
I'll be totally invigorated. Yeah. I'll be naked, too. It'll just be my butt. Like, you know, the naked in a field. Like, where the fuck did he find the field that he can run naked in and not, like, be breaking the law?
Right, right.
Have you seen pictures? I've got friends who've done. I'm like, how the fuck? Where did you go to do that shit?
No, I haven't seen those pictures. That would be funny, though.
I've got a few friends who have done that before. Like, but they don't care. They probably were on something. So
yeah, yeah. Anyway. Right, right. So what's going on? I wanted to, you know, usually we end the show and I say, Scott, what are you doing today? Are you training? But we texted a little bit earlier. This is like 9 a.m. and you said, okay, cool. I'm at the gym right now. So you've already trained. You're already done with your workout for the day. What was your workout today, this morning?
Everything.
Everything.
4-2 training, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So was there a focus to this then, or was this
the full body was the focus.
Okay.
I trained thighs and calves and chest, shoulders, back, and arms. I didn't do abs today because I did them yesterday. So I'm doing 4-2 training, the turbo version.
Okay.
Which is training everything basically four times. Arms are not four times a week, but everything else is four times a week.
Okay.
So yeah, and you know what I would have done? Like, it's funny because you bring that up. I wake up and I assess my fatigue level before I look at my watch and my Oura ring here.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt good when I woke up, and then I wait about 10 minutes and I'm like, oh, you know what? And I would have taken the day off, but unfortunately, I've got the Tampa Pro is next weekend.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I've got to kind of be there on set. So I shifting my training schedule is not really an option for the week. But because I have this phenomenally blessed life, I can take a nap after I tiptoe through the tulips later.
Okay,
I can take a nap after that.
Okay.
So I'll probably play catch up with my sleep, but I had to stick to that training schedule, because otherwise I'll just. It'll all kind of be screwed, because everyone's coming to town for the Tampa Pro.
It's nice.
It's like the big hurrah here in Tampa for bodybuilding. So
that's cool.
Got meetings with various people and client, that kind of thing.
Nice. So, how far is Skip from Tampa?
4 hours.
Okay. Oh, he's not going to be there either, because he's going to be in Michigan this week, actually. I was going to ask if he was going out. That's right. But he'll be up in Michigan. I might. Here's the thing. He's like 3 hours away from me. So if I were to drive out there and train with him, it would be a long day. That would be like an 8 hour, 9 hour commitment, you know, especially if we go out for breakfast or for lunch or something after that. So,
oh, with him too. Yeah, I know.
It'd be fun. Yeah. I'm on the fence with that. But my thought was, I was going to ask if you knew anything about Skip going out to the Tampa Pro, but I guess not. So sounds like you're going to have a busy week. That's not this upcoming weekend, but the following weekend?
It's the next weekend, so 5 days from now.
Oh, this week. Okay, cool. So the end of this week. Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Today's Monday, so people are coming in town Wednesday. There's an athletes meet the pros on Thursday.
Okay.
I think the show starts. I haven't looked at the show. Like, there's just tons of people coming in. I've got everyone wants hey, are you going to be at the Tampa Pro?
I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. You know how it's you go to the Olympia or the Arnold and it's like, hey, let's meet up. And I'm not even going to try to, there's three or four people I've got things set aside for.
Okay.
Otherwise it's just mayhem. Like, it never works out. Sorry, there's a wasp there.
Oh, geez.
You see him there?
I did. I saw him for a second. Yeah.
Yeah. He's buzzing me. So I'm not even going to overplay. You just go and literally you walk in and then the conversations start.
Okay.
You find sometimes before I even get out of the parking lot, there have been times when I go and I park my car and I spend 45 minutes just getting into the venue.
No kidding.
Yeah, because that's just how it is. You know, it's okay, but it's you just can't work around that. And people hey, can I get a picture? It's get a picture. And it's I got to meet someone in their hotel room in an hour. I don't think I can make it.
Yeah.
Because I got too many, I'm going to run into people. So. Maybe that's I'll come cool. up with a disguise. I'll get a toupee or something like that.
Yeah. If you don't have the mohawk, they might not recognize you. That's that's the giveaway. With the mohawk, people are going to see you a lot more. I mean, you're definitely someone that stands out. You look like the Mel Gibson of bodybuilding. But but with the mohawk, it's the Mel Gibson with a mohawk of bodybuilding. So, yeah.
You know, there's a Tampa Comic-Con in I think it's this weekend.
Really?
Yeah, they have a Comic-Con. And I remember it being the same weekend as the Tampa Pro, but I remember being down there downtown where they have it. Yeah. That's just mayhem, too.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different spot, but that would be fun to go to. The thought ran through my head to get a hold of John Meadows and say, hey, what is there like some superhero that I look like that I could go as to Comic-Con? Cause I don't know, like, you know, just so I could, cause I'm sure there's some Mohawk. There is a guy who told me, I have people come up to you every once in a while and say, you look just like.
I'm not the guy to answer that question. I'm not like John or VJ. They know all the, or like Luke Sando, those guys all know the comic book superheroes. I'm not that guy.
It's a Japanese cartoon, like sort of an anime type cartoon. He's a martial artist dude.
Okay. I can see anyway, that.
If I heard it, I'd recognize it. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why I didn't take the day off. I would have otherwise, but I'm like, you know, I'm gonna have to squeeze it in and get it done so that I can stay on the Tampa Pro schedule.
That makes sense. Plus you got to look jacked and full, you know, you don't want your muscles to go flat. You need to keep the blood going
in
them.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually there is a lot to say for that. That's become a big thing in, just as an aside, in measuring muscle size over the course of various studies. So I've been digging into this idea of the dose response of volume and muscle growth.
Okay.
And I literally last night, and when I was traveling down another rabbit hole, this is what I do. I just go down research rabbit holes, you know, as much as I can and dig stuff up. Come on, buddy.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. He's right there. And I found a study literally documenting that there was a muscle swelling that lasted out to 72 hours. That's longer than what many researchers wait to before they make their post-training measurements.
Yeah.
There was a big criticism of that Schoenfeld study that came up when we did the Swiddly Trinity, the big Schoenfeld volume study where they just did exorbitant amounts of volume. So you do get a swelling effect that lasts. It can be easily 5-10% muscle size.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and it can last for a while. I found there's one study of muscle damage where there was swelling that lasted up to like 9 days that I found last night.
I could see that. I mean, I just think of, I mean, my own personal experience. I know that if I don't train, like some guys look better, they look fuller after they've taken some time off. And I've referenced this on one of the podcasts before. I can't remember who said it, but it was about like back in the day at Gold's that everybody would train. And that by the end of the week, Tom Platz would look beat down and terrible, and that he'd come in Monday morning and he'd look small. So he didn't respond well to hitting as hard as he did. Like he was overdoing it versus Arnold would take the weekend off because they took the weekends off or they took Sundays off.
Uh-huh.
Come in Monday and that Arnold would look smaller. And through the week as he trained, he would just look better and better and better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the muscle damage impairs glycogen loading. And we're going to get into fat loading. It can pretty considerably. There's one particular study where they did some calf damaging exercise to the calves, and then had they took in like 1,000 grams of carbs.
Yeah,
this was in humans, and they still didn't see a restoration of glycogen. Because there's probably a couple things going on. One, the damage creates such an energy demand that you just any incoming carbohydrates are used for damage repair.
Yeah.
And secondarily, there's probably some disruption of the normal glycogen synthetic pathways because of that. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense. You know, you're not going to try to, you need all your resources in a muscle that's just been damaged to repair. So that can possibly happen. So yeah, you can gradually, that's why a lot of guys stop training their legs like a week out.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. Because they want to make sure that they've got, you're not going to fill up glycogen wise if the legs are sore. And a lot of guys are doing lots of cardio as they try to drop their body fat and their training. So both of those things are depleting glycogen, and doubling up the concurrent training with both aerobic and strength is going to probably concouple to create even more muscle damage and impair glycogen. So you got to lay off that shit for like a week in order to be able to restore glycogen, really truly fill the muscle out.
just to step back for a second, because it sounds like we're already starting our fat loading topic, which I think is a great thing. Kyle Becker did mention, he said, Kalark, a.k.a. Gladiator. That might be the name of the superhero. Possibly. K-A-L-L-A-R-K, Kalark, a.k.a. Gladiator.
He's just some martial arts dude who has a mohawk. It's colored. I think it's like orange or red or something.
So. Huh. All right.
I'll have to see. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So fat loading, it sounds like we've already kind of started getting into this. I could tell you, I don't think, Scott, that I've ever loaded anybody only on fats. That I have used some type of carbohydrates. Have you ever worked with a client, or have you done it in your own situation where you've loaded on fats only?
Not only. I'm trying to think. Yeah, there have been some people where we just did fats because sort of extenuating circumstances. They just weren't handling carbs and they were stressed. And those have been normally people where they come to me. Sometimes people come to me like a month out if the timing's good, and they want just a peak week.
Okay.
And they, you know, they're kind of like, they don't know what the hell's going on. Their body's sort of kind of screwy. So they don't know what carbs they can take in. They may have been using a very low fat diet, or sort of low carb diet. So they don't even have carb choices that settle well with them. So we would do it that way. Okay. That's been very, very few. When I do my typical peak week, one of the things that I literally do at the beginning when doing, quote unquote, the glycogen depletion portion or insulin sensitizing portion of the week, where we drop carbs before the midweek carb up, is go to a low carb diet that's higher in fat.
Okay.
The intention there is not to drop fat per se. So other people eat as much as they want, and you actually can fat load during that period of time.
Okay.
Because they're replacing whatever carbs they might typically take in, like during a post-workout period, with fat.
Okay.
So you'll fat load to some degree then. Carb loads, that would might be like Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Carb load Wednesday, Thursday. This is kind of the standard regime. This is in the book. This is on John Meadow's site. There's an old, really old version on professional muscle that I wrote 12 years ago or something like that.
Okay.
And then you drop the carbs on Thursday, and with the idea on Friday to drop your water and go to a low-carb diet again. And in that case, if you have more of a water issue, the protein will be higher and the fats will be lower. But you can also load fats then, too, because you need some calories. And you can't, I mean, someone who's a big dude who needs 4,000 grams, 4,000 calories a day, you're not going to give them 1,000 grams of protein.
Right.
800 grams of protein. So they're going to get some fat. So you can replenish the fat and fat load a little bit there as well. So that goes on. The idea is to fat load, carb load, and then drop the water, but there can be fat loading involved with that. So. That does happen. So, but the big thing on the fat loading deal. So, the idea to load the muscle, I'll just start with sort of mine because I've sort of pre-thought the answers. And I've written about this and thought about it a lot in the peak week context. You're trying to make the muscle as full as it possibly can be. Muscle's mostly water. And you've got, among these two nutrients, fat and carbohydrate, fat is hydrophobic, and carbs are hydrophilic. So phobic means scared of, and philia means you like, you're desiring of. So hydrophilic carbohydrate pulls water to it, and that's why most people will do a carb load.
Yeah.
To fill up with glycogen. The glycogen forms a complex with glycogenin. It's a protein and forms its structure where it's stored, and it pulls... The number that people throw out is the 2.7 grams of water per gram of carbohydrate, and that comes from originally a study of liver in rats. The value is highly variable in people. From what I've seen at study, a guy named Bill Sherman has studied that. He's in Ohio. So it's highly variable, but you do get a substantial amount of water. So if you've taken someone who's glycogen depleted, and you can, if you if it's a big person, let's say, and they're low on glycogen, and let's say you load 1,000 grams of glycogen into skeletal muscle throughout the entire body,
okay,
from being in a basically depleted state, which people will be in, especially if they've been dieting for quite a bit, and they stop their cardio, and then you fill them up with 1,000 grams, you could then, if you assume like a 3-to-1 ratio, which isn't at all improbable, that gives you 1,000 grams of carbs plus 3,000 grams of water. That's 4,000 grams. That's 4 kilos. That's 8.8. That's almost 10 pounds. That's 9 pounds.
Yeah.
That's going into skeletal muscle. That literally is an increase of muscle mass.
Wow.
In the form of glycogen and water of 10 pounds. So, that's not bad. That's pretty substantial.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot. I know. So fat is an interesting one because it hasn't been studied nearly as much. I've looked sometime in like the last 6 months, and I didn't find anything that like jumped out as being a new and novel piece of information that I could add to, you know, why and how it works. But basically, there seems to be a lot of variability in the level of intramuscular stored triglycerides, so the fat stores in muscle cells, but it's maybe 1% of the muscle weight, which is maybe like a third of what you have as far as carbohydrates. So on average, just resting stores before you've manipulated anything, you've got about 1/3 as much stored weight in muscle as you do as fat as you do as carbs.
Okay.
And of course, you've got more energy in that because there's more calories per gram in fat versus carbohydrate.
Mm, yeah.
But you can probably, let's say you can double that. So you take like your standard, your reference man, the idea like 170 kilogram guy, 154 pound person with average body fat might have like, it's like 31 kilos of muscle. So okay. 1% of that is like not very much.
Okay,
like a pound. But if you're a big dude and you've got twice that much muscle, you might have 2 pounds of intramuscular triglyceride stored.
Okay.
If you're a larger individual, and if you double that, which is within the, because the ranges are really, really, they're just ginormous for some reason in terms of intramuscular triglycerides. Probably a matter of the function of the muscle. Probably a function of the muscle fiber type as well. I think one of the things you sent me in text message when you broached this topic this morning when I was training was like, which is better?
Yeah, yeah.
And like that sort of question presumes that there's like a black and white difference. And probably carbohydrates are going to be better for most people. But there's some reasons why fat loading works well for other people.
I think I asked, when would it be better? In what situations? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll get to that. So, but imagine like you're someone who's got like maybe 2 pounds of, I'm just sort of throwing out the numbers here, and you can add like maybe 2 pounds of muscle by storing fat. That'll fill you out some. Or if you've been depleted down to like 1 pound. As fat, and you can then like super compensate. And this is what I haven't seen is the extent to which the super compensation can happen.
Okay.
But you might be able to add 3 or 4 pounds.
Okay.
So that's not a bad trade-off either. That's a lot of fat to eat.
Yeah.
aren't necessarily doing that, but some people will fat load throughout the course of a week.
They'll
just start taking in more fat.
Okay.
So which is better? Yes, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you. So,
yeah.
You're saying that with carbs, that you know you can hold X amount of pounds. With fats, you can hold X amount of pounds. Now, if you were to say fill up with carbs, you took that big guy, and you were able to get 10 pounds of glycogen and water in him through using carbs. Would he still then be able to add that 2 pounds? From fats as well, you could increase the triglycerides as well.
I think so.
Okay.
I haven't seen anything. What we do know, or what I have found that is I think is the truth, is that if you're insulin sensitized, for instance, and you take in carbohydrate post workout with fat, the fat in and of itself doesn't impair the glycogen loading.
Okay.
generally speaking, having like high blood triglyceride levels isn't the best scenario for having good insulin sensitivity.
Yeah.
But when you're dieted down to like, 4, 5, 6% body fat and your insulin sensitivity is sky high and your glycogen levels are low, then you're going to be able to load that carbohydrate regardless of the fats that's there. And you see this all the time when people do a shitload or a skip load.
Yeah.
They load up like a motherfucker.
Yeah. And
it'd be great if Ken were here. Cause he could talk about like his experiences on loading. I think more recently, have you seen some of the shit? Yes. I haven't looked for a while, but have you seen on, Elite FTS, some of the skip loads that he was posting like maybe a year and a half ago or a year ago
with like, I think you had mentioned it, that there were more fat. It wasn't just carbs, it was like the breakfast foods with a lot of carbs, but definitely a lot of fats in them too, from IHOP and stuff. Those.
Yeah. We went to the place when I was in Miami a few weeks ago. We went to the place.
Okay.
And where he would get some of those foods. And yeah, they were not like it was all out. Like it was everything.
That's funny.
A lot of like French toasty types of things and hash browns.
Yeah. He loves his French toast. That's his favorite, I think.
French toast is great.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So, and it's funny. Like, so I've got someone, he may even watch this, but someone who, we were talking about insulin index versus glycemic index, and he's got someone who's got a racing fast metabolism. We're trying to keep his weight high, and when you add fats to carbs, when you compare things like bagels, for instance, versus like birthday cake or cake or donuts, which is what he tested out just a couple of days ago, you get a much higher insulin levels.
Mm.
So that's going to facilitate loading. And he filled out like crazy. He took in some, had some cookies and some donuts. What else did he have? And then some desserts that his wife had made.
Yeah.
All this is like really delicious stuff. And it filled him out like crazy. So one of the things there, when you take in that kind of food that you have been eating, of course you have GI issues.
Especially fats, man, because fats are heavier. And if you really hammer them, I found, at least for myself, I found it for other people too. It weighs heavy, a lot. It's a lot heavier in your gut to digest than if you're just eating, say, oatmeal, right?
Fats slow digestion. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they definitely slow digestion. The thing you can do, and this is, we started to do this, and it actually, well, I'm not going to say any more about that but that idea with the, because I don't want to reveal what happened there with the donuts and stuff, but you can, if you find that fats, if you want a shitload, and you don't want to like go with some food you haven't been eating, like I have a friend who used to do like a he wouldn't eat this shit during the prep at all, but he found that he could have a thick crust pizza the morning of a show, like the whole pizza, and he's fine.
Okay. Wow.
Like iron gut, like, okay, most people that would just absolutely destroy them. That would just cripple their GI.
Oh, yeah.
They'd be wearing a diaper on stage if they've got on stage, because they'd be so bad off.
Yeah, if I heard somebody say that and something went wrong, then I would say, of course something went wrong. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah, like you just threw the biggest curveball to your GI possibly could.
Right.
But you can actually get away with, in many cases, combining fat sources and carb sources that you'd be eating during your prep if you've been doing some periodic carb ups.
Yeah.
So like normally, like your carb ups, let's say, because you don't want to have, you don't want to add fats and carbs at the same time, because you like want to get your carbs and keep your calories under control. So let's say those carbs are like a bagel, but you've been eating an almond butter as fats. You can combine the bagel and the almond butter.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe even have some sea salt with that and get the sodium and the fats and the carbs all at once that you'd be getting, and it tastes obviously great.
Yeah.
A bagel with almond butter is just the most delicious thing for someone who's really dieted down.
Absolutely. A little crunchy sea salt on there. That sounds good too.
Yeah, exactly. Like perfect. Like, and that's all, those are the things that I think are creating that psychological effect of like, this is friggin' great. You can get an anticipatory insulin release.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Cephalic insulin release. Yeah. Like, cause you're like, whoa, like that's, you start when people salivate, like that's often associated with an insulin response too, in preparation for the massive amount of food that person intends to eat.
Yeah.
So when stuff tastes good, that registers with your body.
Hey guys, we're going to take a really quick break here just to plug our sponsor. Thanks as always for not fast forwarding through the ad. I will make this brief. TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES. That helps to let them know that you support what we're doing. Plus, it'll give you a discount. Today, I'm going to talk about some of the fat products that they have, since we are, after all, talking about fat loading. You can get MCT powder, avocado oil powder, virgin olive oil powder, and these things can be put directly into your shake. So if you're in a situation where you're leaving work, you need to get that shake in before you head to the gym, and you don't want to mess around with trying to scoop coconut oil or whatever into your shake, well, this will be a great option. You can put this together in the morning, put it in your shaker cup, put that in your lunch bag, and boom, you're ready to go. Fill it up with water, shake it up. You can drink it on the way to the gym. These are high quality products, just like everything else True Nutrition carries. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I'm about to place an order, which I am going to do right after I'm done editing this episode. We're going to get some pea protein isolate and a couple other odds and ends. Of course, they have tons of different whey proteins. They have tons of different flavors, guys. Check them out. They're a high quality company. They've been around for years, and I've been supporting them long before they sponsored our programs. TrueNutrition.com, and use our code ADVICES. And while I've got you, one more note. Dr. Scott's book, Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach. You can go to byobbcoach.com and you could pick that up. That's where the ebook is. If you want to get the hardcover, which is what I have, and believe me, I will tell you, it's worth it to have the hardcover. You can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble. You can order that domestically or internationally. It's a little bit more money, but like I said, it is totally worth it. And this book will take you through an entire year of bodybuilding, from planning your off season to your contest prep to carrying those things out all the way through peak week, all the way to what you have in your gym bag backstage. It's pretty in depth. This has been Scott's entire life of bodybuilding crammed into these pages. So definitely check it out. It's easy to flip through, easy to use, easy to read the references. That is Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach. And once again, TrueNutrition.com, code ADVICES. Thanks, guys. Let's get back to Dr. Scott.
It's funny, like one of the things too, like we were doing a peak week practice and I kind of, a little bit for a second there, kind of blew his mind. I said, let's have some water. We're trying to figure out how to fill him out. And I said, just have like, you know, drink a quarter of that bottle of water. And I said, you may get like a flush and actually start to sweat. And so he drank the water and I said, how do you feel? And I said, did anything happen with your veins, your vascularity? He's like, holy shit, why am I getting that flushing sensation? I'm like, well, I mean, like, it's not as if probably the baroreceptors in his cardiovascular system are sensing some massive change in volume. It was only like 2 or 3 ounces of water.
Huh. Okay.
But he drank that water, and this has happened to me. This happens to me almost every time I reintroduce water after I've dried out for a show. Your body senses like, I finally have fluid. And it's like, sometimes I'll have to pee right away.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of a sudden, I haven't peed for 10 hours. Now I got, and I take 2 ounces and now I have to pee. Like, why would I have to pee now? So there's some perceptual connections between the what was otherwise an autonomic activity of sweating and urinating and moving things through the renal system, that kind of stuff.
Hmm.
So the same thing applies to when you take in food. That's just like, oh my God, a bagel and almond butter with sea salt. Fuck yeah.
Right.
It tastes great. That registers with your autonomic nervous system and your pancreas and the insulin's release and everything else. So you can recreate what the shitload is with foods that your body's used to without fucking up your GI.
Hmm.
So back to the carb load versus the shitload. So like theoretically on paper, because you get more water per gram of carbohydrate and you're storing more carbs, it's a better way to fill up the muscle. You've just basically got a larger potential for increasing muscle volume and muscle size and muscle mass by going from glycogen depleted to glycogen supercompensated and the water that comes with that.
Right.
But some people spill. And some people have GI issues.
Mm.
So when you take in fats, you don't tend to spill.
Oh, yeah.
And fats, too, if you choose the right ones, especially if you choose fats with, like, essential fatty acids that are involved, which feed into prostaglandins, like chocolate is one. The chocolate is kind of its own monster, but almond butter does this, or actually, like, regular peanut butter does this for lots of people. There's some salt in there, so it's not just the fats, but you can get really a nice vascular effect from that.
Hmm.
A vasodilatory effect in a way that will help you get a pump and feel better backstage.
Okay.
So feeding the fats in can do that for lots of people.
Hmm.
And you're not going to spill with fats.
I like that idea. That's a great point.
You're just really not going to. I mean, unless you, like, you, as long as you dried yourself out to some degree and then you start adding the fats in, you're not going to spill with fats.
Hmm.
So that's kind of the big advantage. The other big thing is, how has someone's diet been? If you've been eating low fat, and that's been your dietary approach,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of women, it seems like women tend to do better maybe with a higher carb, lower fat approach, just on average, than men.
Okay.
It's not always the case, but obviously there's, you know, variability across the sexes. Sorry, I'm watching that wasp.
He's still in there, huh?
Oh, yeah. They hang out here at the window. Like, I'll either have to smash him or shush him out.
Yeah.
So if you've been someone who has not been eating much fat, resistance exercise actually uses up muscle triglyceride pretty substantially. It's probably not using it as a major fuel source during the actual sets.
Okay.
But, and you can find the literature, Tesh has done some of this stuff. Scandinavians and this stuff, where they take biopsies and look at glycogen and intramuscular triglyceride and those sorts of things. And you can substantially deplete or reduce muscle triglyceride stores with resistance exercise. So if you're eating a low-fat diet, and you're going to be low in fat, and if you're someone, for instance, you know, and like I said, there's a bell curve for everything. If you're someone who just uses those fats a good bit, and women tend to use fats during exercise more than men do, that's one thing that can give them sort of a relative advantage. They've got other disadvantages, but gives them somewhat of a little extra advantage during, he's flying around there, I hear him buzzing, during endurance exercise. You can have a woman who's been eating low fat because that's the diet that works best for her. And she's been using a lot of fat. Women train with higher volume because they can recover better than guys in many cases. They can get away with that shit. So the fats are really, really low.
Yeah.
And women sometimes tend to have water issues. It could be let's say it's a bikini competitor and they're just not quote unquote lucky enough that that their menses or their premenstrual period comes before the show, so they've got a water issue there.
Yeah.
Then you've got a scenario where someone's low in fat, they haven't been eating fats, so those fats are going to taste really good, and they can fat load without the fear of fat load effectively because they've got such low intramuscular triglyceride levels that they can boost those up with the fats, and they'll get a good fat loading effect without the water issue.
Hmm.
And it tastes great. Like, it's like for someone who's not been eating much fat.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Delicious, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I've seen that fats always seem to help. I've had it in, I feel like every case I've ever loaded somebody, if it's just carbs, like if I just keep it real clean, for instance, and we just do carbs, it's a different look than if you load them with a little, at least some fats in there, you know, add that little bit of fat in to the meals. And it's just like they hold it better. And Scott, is there anything you're familiar with about fats holding the fullness longer? Because I've heard that said a lot with people, that you use the fats to then like hold the peak or hold the pump, you know?
Yeah, like that's the terminology that's used. So that as far as I can, that makes sense totally. If you trace that back, it's to the idea that both carbohydrates and fats their levels are going to be reduced because of resistance exercise.
Okay.
So what's probably going on, when you do your sets, you're using glycogen. Just the energy demand of the exercise requires that you use carbohydrate. those metabolic pathways can provide, they can supply the ATP at the rate requisite to train in that way.
Yeah.
But then you stop, and you still have some energy that needs to go to restoring the homeostasis in the cell. So you've still got an oxygen debt to repay, for instance. You might, one way to look at it. So that's probably when you still got elevated metabolism. You're huffing and puffing. You're not doing the exercise, but you're just sort of walking from one to another, resting. You're restoring energy balance there, and you're going to use some fats.
Right.
So that's probably when, and actually you can have some glycogen restoration during those rest periods as well, just when carbohydrates gets taken back up, and sometimes lactate can be probably reformed into glucose and then stored as glycogen. But that's probably when those fats get used. So if you you have a scenario, let's say, where you haven't fat loaded, your fat levels are really low, you use some glycogen up, and then you stop your set, and then you've got to somehow you've got to restore energy homeostasis in the cell. You don't have any fats to rely on because fat levels are low. The fuel you will use, generally speaking, is a function of the fuel that you have.
Mm.
So I've got fat here. You can see my hands. I got fat here and I have carbs here. I use the carbs during the exercise, and then I stop the exercise, and then the fats are there because now energy demand isn't as high, and I can use the fats to bring the cell back to its resting state and recover. But if I take my glycogen, I use my glycogen during the set, and I don't have any fats left, if I want to recover energy status in the cell, I use glycogen. And the next set, I use glycogen. Mm-hmm. The next set, I use glycogen. And the next thing you know, your glycogen levels are very low. If you have fats there for recovery in between, that will help you hold the carb load better.
Okay.
So the two work in conjunction with one another. So that's what's going on. And there is some, you will hold a carb load, at least from the few studies I've seen. Once you've loaded up, you hold it for about 5 days, as long as you don't do any exercise.
I remember you saying that before, yeah.
Yeah, we covered some of these bits and pieces in the past. So if you pose like a mother, like some people, like they load up and like, okay, now they look great, and now they just pose and pose and pose and pose and pose.
Yeah.
And they used up then they just defeat the purpose of the load in that case. So you have to relax some.
That makes sense.
There was a guy at the Universe. He was a big dude. I don't think he didn't end up he wasn't probably in good enough shape, and this is why he was doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of muscle, great physique. And he was backstage, and he was just pumping up continuously, constantly.
Oh yeah.
And he'd probably like filled up like more than he needed to, so he could kind of get away with that, and he probably spilled over.
Mm.
So I think he was trying to like pump up and sweat and get rid of some of the water,
burn it off.
In that case, yeah. So he I don't know if he even knew. He knew he looked better in doing that, but the decision that was kind of being made physiologically is to do the exercise and give up the fullness of the glycogen that he'd stored so that he could drop the water that he was holding because of having overfilled.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So what else about fat loading? It works really well. Now, if someone's been eating a lot of fat, that may not be the best. You always want to try stuff.
Yeah.
I'm big on the practice run. I had someone message me just like yesterday. He wants to do a show like this next weekend. He wrote me this long message on Instagram. And it's like, what should I do? And I'm like, man, I have no idea. Why don't you do a practice run? And he actually has been ready in show shape for 2 months, and he just didn't do one.
Oh,
now
he's
waited to the last minute, and he wants me to try to figure it out on Instagram. I'm like, it's like I might as well just try to talk to you in Morse code. Because it's not going to work.
That's funny. Yeah, I noticed that, because I've thought about it too. And obviously, I've done this for a decent amount of time now. You've done this for a lot longer than I have, but there's no magic. Like, you don't just look at someone and say, "Oh yeah, you just need to eat 200 carbs tomorrow, and then you'll be loaded. It'll be fine." The way you know is because you've done it. You've practiced with them. And by the time you actually get to the show, you've tried it enough times that it's pretty predictable. And I feel like in part, I look at that as being just like what you do. I don't question it now. But in part, I feel like I kind of learned that from you, too. Just over the last couple of years, I've gotten better and better at that. But I think I, in part, owe that to you, too, though. So I don't want to just say I came up with that idea myself, or I just always knew that.
Yeah. Well, it like people see you, Chris Aceto.
Yeah.
And he's like a magician, you know?
Yes.
He just knows. He's like, okay, like swap the sweet potatoes for white potatoes. It's like, how do you know that? Like what wizardry is this? But it's because he's worked with that person and he's seen their, he's like, they've been sending him daily pictures for months.
Right. Right.
And he's like, okay, I want you to do sweet potatoes for the next 2 days. And he watches them fill up and then they only get so full. And it's like, then when he adds white potatoes, like, oh my God, like the next day they look badass.
Right.
Seeing veins he didn't see before and sweeps he didn't see before. So he knows what those different carb sources do to that person.
Right. And it's not that white potatoes work for everyone, you know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, so you don't, like, you're right, it's not a black and white type of thing, but so you'd have to try it out. Some people, you know, might do really well. Here's the thing, like, to juggle in your head, and this is why you really can't tell. If you've been low on fats in your diet, that would make sense that you could fat load really well because you're low on fats and you would expect some super compensatory effect.
Yeah.
Once the fats are introduced. That has not at all been documented that I'm aware of. Probably will be with all the keto stuff and low carb stuff that people are doing now. In some way, shape, or form. I'd love to see people, you know, it would probably be with endurance athletes, not bodybuilders, of course.
Right.
But there's also the possibility that if you've been eating lots of fats, that then your body has adapted, in particular the muscles and the enzymes that are involved with the storage and utilization of muscle triglyceride are primed for storing fat. So you've adapted. You're fat adapted, so to speak. And this is going to give you the enzymatic machinery for storing more fats. So I'm going to just go out on a ledge because this sort of makes sense. And it's kind of a new idea, actually, that I just sort of popped into my head. But one of the things, and this is how I've always kind of do it, one of the things that I do with people is I'll have like no carb days on the non-training days for the most part because you're not taking in the carbohydrates. That fuel is not necessary. For things that most people do, if you're sitting at your desk or you're walking your dogs, you don't need to be glycogen. If you're working outside and doing construction and heavy labor, then you probably need some more carbs. But in those cases, people would eat a higher fat diet. Yeah. And that's going to create some ability and metabolic flexibility to use fats, in particular those fats they've had in their diet. And then intra and post-workout, I have people taking carbohydrates. Restore the carbohydrate that's there, make use of the insulin release for recovery and blah, blah, blah. So you've got a scenario where people are alternating low carb and high carb days during the diet. That hypothetically would be sort of the best of both worlds in order because you've been throughout the course of your diet engaging fat storage machinery and fat utilization machinery and carbohydrate utilization machinery simultaneously. So when it comes to the week before the show, and you employ a fat load period at the beginning of the week to prime yourself because you've got lower insulin levels when you take in fat. So your insulin sensitivity is high and you used up some glycogen for the glycogen load. You fat loaded because you can do that well because you've been eating fats and you carbohydrate load because you can do that well because you've been loading with carbohydrates post-workout. Now you've got a scenario where your machinery, enzymatically speaking, is ready for both fat loading and carbohydrate loading. So I don't know, like but you still have to try it. Someone who hasn't been eating many fats, you know, they may not have the GI may not like that very much.
Yeah,
if they've been eating low fat, high carb.
So diet. The key is be ready early enough so that you can experiment with that stuff and find out, right? Find out if you're sensitive to fats before your quote unquote peak week, right?
I think so too. Yeah, absolutely. I've listed in the book, like, you can use, like, digestive enzymes can help, and GASX, simethicone, can be a lifesaver. There's something called curing pills, C-U-R, like I'm curing cancer, but these are curing digestive issues that work awesome.
No kidding.
Your GI can be just screwed. And you can take a packet of those. They come in these little vials, or these little little granules, little pellets, actually. That works really well for alleviating GI distress. This is all in the book.
Curing pills.
Yeah, Kudling is what it is, the name of the patent in Chinese medicine, and it just sometimes when they translate things, like, the stuff gets spelled differently, and you get, all of a sudden, get weird spelling, so they call it curing pills.
Makes more sense here.
Yeah, I know. So, there's things you can do to remedy that. Some people might have gastric reflux, so they might have to take an antacid or a Tums, Prilosec or something like that. Some people, maybe they've got anhydrochloria, they've got low acid levels in the stomach, so they might take, like, betaine hydrochloride.
Yeah.
So, depending on your issues, a practice run, those are just some things to juggle.
Yeah.
That you may have to deal with. So, you can usually get it done if you've got at least one practice run to work out the kinks.
I like the sounds of that. We've talked through this topic for a while now. I don't think that we have enough time. I think we should just hold our next topic for the following show, Scott. I think that would make the most sense.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good information to dig in here, too. Scott, we mentioned the book. What book is that you speak of?
It's funny. I give the books away all the time. I have one, but it's in a box, and it would take me forever to dig out. I can't pull the book from over here because
mine's upstairs now too. But what's the name of this book?
It's called "Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach."
Oh, okay.
Yes, it's available on Amazon. You just go to Amazon. You type in, like, lo and behold, in that little search term, you type in "Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach," or you can go to beyourownbodybuildingcoach.com.
Get the ebook there. That'll get the ebook.
You can get the ebook there, or you can find the link to Amazon. It's available worldwide on Amazon.
Okay.
It's also on Barnes and Noble.
Okay. I thought it was Amazon and then Barnes and Noble worldwide, but now you can get Amazon worldwide as well, huh?
It's always been both worldwide.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. Nice.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Cool. Great book. And definitely, there's also, you'll find links to get the book, the ebook, for like half the price. That's not Scott's. If you search for it and you see that, that's a pirated copy that has taken Scott's great information, and they are capitalizing off of it. He gets $0.00 for that, which I know you're not making this book so that you can, this wasn't like a get rich scheme, to put the book out. And it's not, it's the reason you do this podcast, is for the same reason you wrote the book, is to educate people, help everybody learn to be their best and to figure these things out for themselves. So these are tools for that. And definitely go one of these legit routes, guys, when you plan on picking the book up, because otherwise, I can't support that. I can't support that. It angers me. I was looking for a book, and I saw ebooks for slashed prices. Same thing, where you could get the book I was looking for $10. You could get the Kindle version, or you could go to this other site.
Even the Kindle, wow, okay.
And you could go to this other site and you could get it for like $6 or $5, something like that, which was completely, BS. But
those, as far as I can tell, the folks who set up those sites, like, literally they just, because it's an international thing, like they're taking books that are copyrighted in particular countries, and they're located in, Timbuktu, something like that.
Right.
And they just set up an online, and just the search engine optimize themselves, so that they come up right off the bat, and they just like take pirated books. They don't produce any products other than the stuff that they've stolen from other people.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's not really a black market. It's like a market you would find like in an old Star Wars movie or something like that, where everything is stolen. Like, it's all illicit.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all like, shady.
Or like when I lived in Mexico, they had CD stands, and you could go and buy CDs, and they would be like it would be like random stuff. It would be like what was it, like Mariah Carey meets the Backstreet Boys, and it would just be like a bunch of their songs from Backstreet Boys and a bunch of songs from Mariah Carey all burnt onto a disc.
Yeah.
And that was it.
I, I've seen that at swap meets and stuff. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically.
Yeah, you know that's illegal, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, same thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, though. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the thing that I always think, though, that if someone is getting the book in that way, they're probably, I mean, here's the thing, like, they probably are just giving their money to that site in many cases. There are a lot of people that I think, if you're looking just for, like, the cheapest version of the book,
yeah,
then my guess is that a good amount of those folks don't have the mindset to really make good use of the book.
Oh, that's a good point.
I can kind of tell the people who are going to make good use of the book, a lot of times they'll buy it as a hardcover now. I'm learning that.
Mm.
Tremendous lesson. Fortitude Training, the next edition, will be a hardcover for sure.
No kidding.
Yeah, because people really like that. And the people who, many, many people really, really like it. And I'll say this too, another thing when I get done with this other thought. Yeah. It's just, if you're looking for like kind of like the easy way through to kind of like, just get the information and like to tell me what to do,
mm-hmm.
in a black and white way. And so you buy my ebook for $6 or whatever they're selling them for. You're not going to find that there. It's not going to be there.
Mm.
So those folks probably who are buying it that way, they're just giving their money to those scoundrels who are selling the pirated versions. And that sucks all around because they basically sold them on the hype of the book, providing people with that mentality that they're going to just get like some super secret.
Yeah.
And the super secret is in your own mind and making use of it.
Hmm.
And that's what the book is trying to evoke in individuals who read it and make use of it.
Hmm.
And people who are ready for that will typically end up finding it through my site, I found. So it all works out in the end, pretty much.
Can I help you host an audio version of the book next time? Where, like, I'll just, like, introduce it, you know, chapter 5,
oh, yeah.
you know, blah, 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 Dr. Scott. And then you just take over and start reading.
I tell you, I had one person who wanted me to make an audio version of Fortitude Training, I think it was, just for him.
Really? Just for him? Why not?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's like, could you make one for me? I'm like, no, I don't have, like, sorry, 13 hours to read through it. I would want to shoot myself in the head. But I made. I don't know how well like a book like that would lend itself really to an audio version.
Yeah,
I mean,
I could see portions of Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach. I could see Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach. It would be still very educational, but the way that it reads is like a manual where you can flip from. Like it's like you wouldn't get like an automotive repair guide and have that on an audiobook. So I get that, you know.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I've had some audiobooks before where they like they refer to the unless sometimes if you have the person who wrote the book reading the book, then they'll sometimes just step aside and say, "Okay, now what you be seeing here is figure 1. Figure 1 depicts this." But I've actually read audiobooks or listened to audiobooks where they just kind of read through that stuff and it's like, well, that was just a waste of 5 minutes because I don't have the picture that I need in order to conceptualize what they're talking about there.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just read through it. It's like, what? That was just a waste. Like, that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Thing I was going to say is that people ask a lot of times, there is a hardcover, so buy the hardcover if you want a hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
That seems obvious, but it's worth reiterating because people come to me all the time having bought the PDF, and they're like, oh, I wanted the hardcover. And PDF is cheaper. But if you like, you can go on eBay and get a Kindle for like $30.
Okay.
Some of them are pretty nice. And people like the feel of those in some cases. So if you want something to hold in your hand and you buy a Kindle, it's a PDF. So you can transfer all the other eBooks you might want and put that on your Kindle. And the batteries on those last forever.
Okay.
So I suggest that to people all the time. Literally, someone tells me they're in that jam. They're like, I have the PDF, but I really would like something to hold in my hands. I don't want to look at my phone. I just go to eBay and I find a Kindle for them. And I link. I said, here you go. I would buy this Kindle.
Yeah.
And sometimes they do. So that's a thought for people who are in that predicament.
Yeah.
Is the Kindles are cool.
I've never used one before.
Yeah. I have my dad's old Kindle here.
Hmm.
He loved the thing. He read hundreds of books on that.
Nice.
So, yeah, it gives people an option.
I like the idea of a Kindle. It's less things to move when you move, you know?
Yeah, right.
Versus a shelf of books.
Right.
I like that idea. That's why I stopped. Yeah. That's why I stopped collecting records. I used to collect vinyl.
Yeah.
It's a lot to move when you have.
You can't recreate the sound, though, from what I hear from people who are really into records. It's like there's just.
Yeah, but I'm okay with that today.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mostly just listen to my headphones when I train anyway. I can't take the record player to the gym.
That would be awesome. unless you want to do like a flash dance. Was it flash dance? Remember when she goes and she's going to do her dance and there's the water and she goes in and she puts the record down. She puts the needle on the record and then I'm a maniac for your love. Yeah. Imagining your next Instagram video, Scott goes into the gym with a stringer tank top on.
And some leg warmers.
Some leg warmers, and you start playing some AC/DC.
I'm thinking that. Or just like, you know, an old one where you just like have to do the crank. If that's what I was going to. Like, crank it, and then you just put the needle down, and then you go.
And you have to have your dog in there kind of looking at the, looking at the thing like
that. Right.
Yes. All right. I'll look for it.
Well, Scott, I'm going to be looking for your Instagram post later today, and your. I think that I'm not sure if the tulips are blooming right now, at least not here in Michigan. But if there's a field full of tulips, I hope that you can find it today, Scott, in Florida.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I will not. I'll toss this out there. It's interesting. Yeah. Eric Helms, you know who Eric Helms
is?
Yes,
I've known him through you mentioning him.
Yeah. He's a phenomenal guy. Actually, I've been listening to his podcast a good bit, and I really like it. Brilliant guy. We did a podcast together not too long ago, and he's been doing shows. He's a natural bodybuilder, and he's phenomenal shape, and he posted a striated glute shot.
Okay.
Just badass.
Was it in a field of tulips?
No tulips, just the ass. Just like the rear double bicep, maybe he was, you know, pulling his lats back to show the striations of the Christmas tree.
Yeah.
But, oh, God, Instagram came down on him.
Really?
Pretty bad, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess he lost, like, quite a bit of followers instantly.
Really?
Doing that, yeah. Well, I mean, it was a butt shot, you know.
You mean his followers were upset by that?
Apparently hundreds of them were. So he put up a really phenomenal, it's a really well-spoken guy, and He and I have a very much similar mentality in terms of sort of driving the intrinsic value from this pursuit and, you know, using it as a way to better oneself. You'll hear, listen to his podcast. But and obviously, he's got a PhD and he's scientifically inclined. He loves to train, and he's sort of an explorer of the bodybuilding landscape in very much the same way I am. So follow Eric Helms if you're not already. But yeah, he posted that, and I'd seen the post, and then the next day I saw, and he put up like an apology.
Really?
Which I would have done as well, because he offended, someone was offended, and like his intent was not to offend them, and I'm not going to speak for him, but he was not in any way trying to judge whether or not they should or shouldn't have been offended. If someone's offended, then they're offended, and that wasn't intent, so he just apologized for having done that, but it was just sort of it was an interesting phenomenon to see, because people did get pissed. Hmm. His intention was not like to, you know, to be to offend someone with some semi pornography or whatever. It's like just like that's the penultimate. Like, you got striated glutes like that. That's fucking badass from a bodybuilding perspective.
And you know what? Here's an interesting because it is. That's like our nowadays our hallmark, right? Of being peeled. Now, if this had been a female, so Eric has, I'm looking, I just followed Eric. He has 100.
What is it, three, which is?
It's Helms 3 DMJ.
3DMG, right.
Yeah, if you just search Eric Helms, H-E-L-M-S, he'll come up. I still don't think, he's not hurting for followers. He's following 300 people, and he's got 100 and 1,000 followers. So
yeah,
he's still not hurting for followers. We'll say that. But that said, if we took a female bikini pro, say, and she had 101,000 followers, and she posted a picture. Let's take a sexy bikini girl who posted a picture of her butt. Do you think that there would have been 100 outraged people that stopped following her?
So she would have got another 10,000 followers.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Or whatever.
What did Corin do?
Oh, corn posts, because corn glutes come in like just friggin' crazy peel.
Yeah.
But you can probably go back, because she just competed recently, and she posts those glute shots. And she gets shit for it, too, you know, either way. Yeah.
Of course. Okay.
But it's just an interesting thing. So I would probably not, just because, not that, well, first of all, I don't like to offend people, because if I know I'm going to do something that might offend someone, I probably won't do it, unless I realize that there's some sort of a payoff in terms of making a point, or the offense is actually going to bring an enlightenment to folks in a way that I think provides an overall, like, kind of positive benefit for everyone involved. But yeah, I don't want to deal with the backlash.
God, no.
Oh, my God. Oh, shit. Yeah. So I'll just hike my trunks up when I'm on stage, something like that, and then I can get away with it, you know?
Yeah.
And then I can see my pill goods. But it's the same thing. I think he put like a little square like in his butt, or his butt crack. I can't remember.
I've seen that done time and time again on Instagram. Yeah. I didn't know that it was such an issue.
He's a very intellectual guy, so I think if you look at the demographic of his followers, they might be a little it's different than, for instance, actually Luke Sandow got some shit because he posted a pic in a sock.
Oh.
When he was competing, and like Lee Priest was going off, so why don't you just put some trunks on?
Yeah.
I don't know if that affected Luke, but like Luke just popped in my head. This isn't a pic on Luke, but I would imagine Luke's followers are different than Eric's followers.
I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so. That makes sense.
Yeah, so there's a certain demographic that part of who was listening to Eric for the sake of the science and the scientific insights and those sorts of things, and they're like, they're not appreciative of that other aspect of bodybuilding, which appeals to him, because he's part of him is just a dude. He's just a guy, like, he's a meathead like I am, and I think he would admit that.
Yeah.
So he's a meathead, and meatheads would think it's badass when your glutes are shredded.
Absolutely.
So fuck yeah, put up the badass picture of the shredded glutes, absolutely without any intention of trying to offend anybody.
Yeah.
But it happens. So, you know, there's nothing you can do. You can't please everybody, as they say.
And I think you're right about, like, the demographics, because I remember, and I've talked to people about this, and I'm sure you remember this too, Scott. There was a time that you could stand on the gym floor, say you're getting ready for a show, you could in any gym, it wouldn't be uncommon for hardcore bodybuilders to take off their shirts, take off their pants, and at the end of their workout, and be posing right there on the gym floor. You know, like if you're
I still do it.
Do you? Do you? Yeah. I remember you telling me that story about that woman who was disgusted of you posing.
Oh,
remember that?
Yeah. But was off in the aerobics room. Yeah.
I've had issues too. Even at like Powerhouse Gym, Powerhouse World Headquarters, I was working with two guys and they both had their shirts off. They both had their shorts on still. And I was just looking at them in an aerobics room that nobody was using off to the side. And somebody came in and said, "Hey, you guys can't do that in here." And I said, "Oh, okay." I acted kind of dumb. And I was like, "Oh, okay, where should we go?" And he said, this is at Powerhouse Novi, his guy named Brian. He said, "I don't care, but you can't, I don't care where you go, but you can't do that in here." I was like, "Huh, okay."
Wow.
But there was a time that, that was common practice. I'm sorry?
At that powerhouse, are there pictures of bodybuilders anywhere on the wall?
Yeah, but there is down by the front, but they're starting to do away with that. They're trying to turn it into more of a fitness club. You know, it's most of the people who train there now are fitness people, or you know, just interested in getting into better shape. But yeah, there was a time.
Mainstream.
Yeah, there was a time though that would be super common. You know, like at Gold's Gym, you still see videos of people posing in the magic mirror. They peel down. And that's maybe okay there in one gym in the world, you know, but most places, man, you can't do that kind of thing anymore. And I guess that's the same thing with Instagram. People don't want to see your butt, I guess, apparently, even if it's striated. You know, we're not looking at it. It's not a sexual thing, I guess. That's the thing. There's no, what's to be offended by it? You know, you're looking at, this is about bodybuilding, and this is about getting purely peeled. So I don't know.
Yeah. I was just thinking, the irony is that so much of mainstream gyms now, and literally what people are doing when they're lifting weights, this bizarre like attempt to build the muscular callus by lifting and lowering things, is to bodybuild. Like you're bodybuilding. You really are.
Absolutely.
But people don't realize that because it's so far in the distance. And in that gym, it was a Gold's. Was it a Gold's? they changed from golds to another. I think they just called it, came up with their own name locally at the time. But I think it was still golds at that time. It was actually. And along they call it, was like the golds classic version. I think maybe they're trying to like keep the golds franchise alive. And there were pictures of like Arnold and Corey Everson and Rochelle McLish of like, you know, some of the best known bodybuilders literally across the wall,
yeah.
Like huge, like a mural style, like 6 foot tall pictures of Arnold.
Yeah.
And that was the context in which that woman made that this is a disgusting comment.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, this is interesting. Like,
yeah.
If you looked at the wall, like, how can you miss that? Like, the whole gym is a giant mural of bodybuilders.
That is interesting.
Yeah, yeah, it is. So that's a topic that – anyway, so I won't be posting any pictures of my ass. And don't send me requests to them. I get plenty of weird requests. So anyway, yeah, unfortunately.
I miss those days of the gyms being more – they felt more comfortable then. I just trained – over the weekend, Victoria came with me, and we went to meet a client who we were at Highland Park Powerhouse, the original Detroit Powerhouse. They have literally hundreds of pictures there still of all the great bodybuilders and just fitness people that were interested in bodybuilding. Like there's pictures of like Hulk Hogan that he autographed. Great poster I saw of Samir where he autographed it saying, you know, to my first gym when I moved to the U.S. So many great memories here. It was cool, man. There's so many great pictures there. Yeah, I look up at those pictures, man, when I'm training. There's one in particular of Milos, and when I look at that, I'm about to do a set. It's right by the racks, and so I'm either in the rack or it's right by these hammer strength back machines. And I look at those pictures and I think about like his look. I just get real inspired. And then down a little ways, there's one of Casey Viator, and he's doing this really cool pose, and it looks like he's on like Muscle Beach with the ocean behind him. You know, it's really cool, big poster on the wall, and those things inspire me, man. And I hope that the next generation, the kids that are like two generations beyond us that are coming up now, that might not ever get a chance. They're training at LA Fitness. They may not know anything else. I hope that they have a chance to experience that too one day. You know.
I think it's really a lot of that kind of in gym etiquette and perception and sort of having that perspective. It's a function of the gym and the gym owners to a certain degree.
Absolutely. It is. Yeah.
Like the gym that I trained yesterday and I trained today, and I went in yesterday, this gym, it's really close. And I was like, I was the only one there, I think, when I first got there, which is great. And, a woman came in. And she seemed pretty quiet. And literally, I was on the leg press. I had it. And this is a gym where sometimes you'll find like 5 plates on one side of the leg press.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
Like none on the other. Like, I'm like, holy shit. I just go on. I'm like, I don't even want to like, I feel like if I bump that, it's going to fall over. But I had the leg press, my stuff actually coincidentally was off in the corner near there, but I wasn't trying to guard the leg press. But I was using the leg press. I had loaded it up.
Yeah.
And I'm stretching. And I got my hand on the weight post on the leg press.
Okay.
So literally I'm in contact with the machine itself. And she walks over and she puts her towel down on the leg press to start to use it.
Okay.
And I said, I'm actually using that. And she's like, she looks at me, she's like, what? And I said, I'm actually still using that machine.
Yeah.
And she's looked at me and she just moved on. And she wasn't a bitch.
No,
she didn't seem bitchy at all. She just had no idea because of the nature of that gym. She probably comes in at off times like that, and she finds stuff loaded all the time. And people don't have etiquette, and they don't like ask, like, "Hey, are you using that?" Or maybe she had no idea about any of those things.
Yeah.
So she's just like, and of course, I know because of how I look. You look at me, I'm like, Scott's probably, you know, look at the guy. Like he's a big muscly dude with a mohawk. He's probably an axe murderer. Like he probably, you know, tortures kittens at night for fun. That's what the guy does, you know?
Right.
So I get that. I can sort of sense that look in people's eyes sometimes. So I don't blame her for having that perception about me. So she's not going to come over. And I think this happens in gyms, especially for women. It's just my guess, but I've also heard this too, is that if you're polite as a woman in a gym, guys will misperceive that all the time. Like, oh, she's coming on to me.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, yeah. So she's not going to come over and say, hey, be nice and make eye contact.
Right.
And she probably didn't know the etiquette. There's multiple reasons for her having behaved that way, which was really probably not the best way. Like, when I'm literally, it was, I'm like, aside from having peed on the machine and put a sign on it that says I'm using it, I couldn't have marked the machine any more so that I was on there, you know?
Right, right.
But she just didn't know. So there's so much ignorance. And this points to what you're getting at is, yeah, I hope that, you know, that the big box gyms don't just completely extinguish the memories of sort of the deep pursuit of bodybuilding, that just sort of like see what your body's capable of.
Absolutely.
And relish in what that can bring about in you and all the ways that bodybuilding can benefit us. So
absolutely.
Just say, like, look at that. Fucking Eric Helms has striated glutes. That's badass. And he did that shit while he's holding down a full professorship.
Nice.
And blah, blah, blah. And it's like, so it's his ass. It's awesome. It's amazing. The guy's got striated glutes.
Yeah.
Let's not beat him up for it. So anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot you could go down with that rabbit hole, because if the gyms are asking, you know, forcing people to like behave within these standards, and then that goes along with like not trying too hard, not pushing too hard, then, you know, what's that going to do for the people?
Arm.
Yeah, all that stuff. You know, and that kind of translates over. I know some people that have been booted out of some what were once hardcore gyms. You know, Powerhouse Novi, again, I'll mention. I've known guys who were kicked out of there. Now, these guys were like a little bit more extreme, and they were making more noise than I ever would. But nonetheless, the general public is being told, you know, the average kid, the 20-year-old kid who's just learning how to train, sees these guys getting kicked out of there. And what does that do to him? That makes him think like, well, maybe I don't want to try that hard, because I'm going to fit in society. I don't want to be like those guys who got kicked out of this place, and that maybe he's never going to push to do the four plates or five plates that those guys were doing on those lifts. So
I think for my next, I don't know, dozen Instagram posts, I'm going to just scream my ass off.
With your pants, with your butt. Show your butt too.
Yes, I'm going to wear like the old school 80s.
Yes.
Zoop, or like the pinstriped, you know, tight fitting pants.
Yes, sir. I know.
And just fucking scream.
Hell yeah.
Just
I like that.
To know, let people know it's the way it should be. Like loud and proud.
Loud and proud. All right, man. Let's get out of here. Right. What do you say?
Cool. Yes, I agree. Let's do it. We're wandering.
For another episode of Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson, I'm Scott McNally. Go to fortitudetraining.net and check out BYOBBcoach.com, as well as Amazon or Barnes & Noble for Dr. Scott's book, Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach. And of course, please support our sponsor, TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES for all sorts of great products. Feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions about any of their stuff. Guys, thanks for watching. Dr. Scott, thank you again for another great episode.
Absolutely. Adios.
See you guys.
Advices Radio Network.